Good. So I'm Rick Hansen, right? And today is Wednesday, March 30th, correct? 2011. I'm going to post these. I usually post these talks, but I'm going to particularly post this talk and the three that come after. As you may know, we've been really exploring what it's like to apply the major themes of the Buddha that are found in his so-called fourth foundation of mindfulness. Foundation, another word for that would be application, or where one is to rest attention. Okay, and in the fourth resting place for skillful attention, he has the major themes of Buddhism, which include what are called the five aggregates or components of experience, the four noble truths, the seven awakening factors, the five hindrances. The list goes on and on. And what we've been doing is thinking about how can we mine those really rich themes and apply them to this year's theme for us as a gathering, relationships. All right, where the rubber really meets the road, you know, where you really can tell what your practice is, you know, when you go home for the holidays, as it were, or get a phone call from a teenager who's, you know, in a tough situation. So tonight, what I want to do is explore how to apply one of these elements in the fourth foundation, namely the aggregates or components of experience, to an upsetting interaction or relationship. All right, and in so doing, see the ways in which the unpacking of our experience into its component parts can actually aid us immediately, not esoterically or mystically, although that would be great for bonus points, but very practically and concretely can aid us immediately to help us feel less afflicted, less upset, less reactive, less compelled and controlled by our reactions to things. You know, the Buddha was, in a way, an early pre-modern postmodernist. One of his great strategies was to routinely deconstruct experience, you know, take the fabric, the tapestry of our experience, and pull apart, tease apart its threads so that we can see both how fleeting and, in a certain sense, non-binding or not important experiences are, including the most beautiful and most awful ones, both. And we can also see the way that the causes unfold in our experience that lead to suffering and harm or happiness and benefit. Okay? So in that light, a quick review. The five aggregates consist of first, form, which means all of material reality, including energy, because E equals mc squared, crazy stuff, quarks, black holes, strange things. Okay, that's form, and the barest apprehension of form, including, for example, sensation in the body. Raw sensation, the most elemental form of sensation or sight or sound, partakes of both whatever physical material process is involved in that, like sound waves or, you know, a physical object touching our skin, creating sensation, and the most immediate, barest sense of that. So form is kind of a twofer. It can, you know, the Buddha did not himself believe that all this arose in the mind. He, in a basic sense, thought there really was material reality, but he primarily focused on our experience of it. So from here on out, of the remaining four aggregates, they're all about our experience. So in effect, of the five aggregates, four and a half of them are about what in philosophy is called phenomenology, our experience. Okay? Then comes the second aggregate, which is the hedonic tone, or in psychology or in Buddhism, the feeling tone of experience, pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. Then comes perception, which has to do a lot with labeling situations or things or our experience, and memory, because memory is very involved in the categorization of things in our experience. Then the fourth aggregate, called the volitional formations. Volitional meaning willed or intended in some way, not necessarily desired, but caused or constructed in some way. Formations, and the formations include just about everything else. Emotions, motivations, wishes, plans, worries, ruminations about the past, you know, that grumbling little case that arises in the mind about the people that did us dirt, you know, all that stuff. Okay, that's in the fourth aggregate, right? And then the fifth aggregate is awareness or consciousness, which is not seen as anything mystical or universal, but rather something that is constructed by causes, that arises dependently in the meeting of a particular kind of event, a stimulus of some kind or another, a sight, a sound, a touch, a taste, a smell, or a thought, the organ that apprehends that stimulus, right, and the consciousness that binds the two together. That's the model, the Buddhist model, which interestingly has been quite confirmed by neuroscience, which observes that the early processing stream in which sensation or sight or sound or taste or smell or even thought is constructed is initially somewhat independent, and then it gets assembled in ways that are still not entirely or far from well understood, actually. Yet it gets assembled into a coherent whole. In other words, our moment-to-moment experience presents itself as a coherent whole, and yet the processing streams at the kind of very basic level that produce that are independent of each other. Okay? All right. So now, that's it on the heavy lifting in terms of the theory part. Okay, you want to get into the mess of it all? We're in a little mess here. All right. So what I propose to do is take an interaction in an important relationship, or if you like, the relationship altogether, and your reaction. So we're going to be looking at a reaction you have to a situation or a person or something that happened. Okay. In a mild way, I was thinking recently about something odd that happened in kind of the book publishing part of my life, in which, oddly enough, I wanted to create an arrangement in which a company actually would end up with more money if we changed something slightly, because I thought it would be better all the way around. They actually did, it would end up with substantially more money, but they were kind of weirdly pissy about it because it would represent a change. And then they said, we agree with this, but grumble, grumble, there's a change here, even though we recognize we're going to make significantly more money. You know, and I was like, that was weird. So I had a reaction to it, right? Or, you know, I might think about, you know, anything else that would be upsetting or an important and difficult relationship. So I propose that you find something and you pick something and you reflect on it as we walk through the five aggregates with regard to it. Okay, so I suggest don't go to your early life trauma, you know. On the other hand, something that's moderately upsetting would be probably really good to work with. Okay, is that clear? So you're going to have a situation in your mind, a relationship, a reaction, you know. It could be very acute, or it could be kind of long-standing, like your reaction feeling like you don't get all the love you really long for and deserve in your life, or you don't get the kind of approval or admiration you feel you really deserve, or you're continually alarmed and made anxious by certain situations, or you find yourself worrying about money a lot, or every time you think about, you know, your father passing away or your mother or what have you, it still really gets you. Okay? All right? You got one? So I'm going to walk this through it fairly systematically. And if your mind wanders a bit, it's okay. Try to bring it back. And as much as you can, try to stay with your direct experience. It's okay to note in your mind, you know, to have insights or to realize certain things. You feel very free to write things down as we go. But, you know, as much as you can, I think it will serve you to think of this as a mindfulness practice. Okay? Okay, so here we go. So with regard to, and I'll call it the situation. It could be a relationship, right? So here's the first question, just, and this is a guided reflection for roughly the next 15 minutes. What actually happened? So in a very neutral, summary, and objective way, in a very fair-minded way, see if you can name to yourself what happened. What actually happened? And I'm going to move through a series of questions. Feel free to ignore my questions or stay longer with one of them if you like, or skip over it entirely. Next, with regard to what happened, is it still happening? Is it still here in objective reality? Or is it only or mainly here inside your own mind? With regard to the situation, what were some of its causes, or most of it, or all of its causes? And see if you can open to a widening sense of the causes upstream of the event, the situation. What happened? I'll move on now to the feeling tone of pleasant, unpleasant, or neutral. So with regard to the situation, what are, you know, some of the aspects of it that are unpleasant? And see if you can describe some of the unpleasantness, like, nausea, or pain, or agitation, as simply and clearly as you can. What's unpleasant in the situation? Be aware of what's actually unpleasant in the situation, as well as what's unpleasant that's anticipated. In other words, the anticipated unpleasant in your reactions to the situation. In other words, worry about what could happen, or what you might feel if, or how others could be affected, and how that would in turn affect you. Anticipated unpleasantness. What's pleasant in your reactions to the situation? If anything at all. And see what might be not so intuitively obvious, like, for example, finding what's pleasant in anger. Or pleasant in reaching out to others for support. Or pleasant in a kind of righteous case or formulation about the situation. or pleasant in your reactions, for example, a sense of moral superiority, or greater intelligence, or being a better Buddhist. How about neutral? What are some of the things that are neutral in the situation? That are neither pleasant nor unpleasant? And then, very important question, how are you reacting to the feeling tone of unpleasant or pleasant or neutral? What are you chasing after, for example, that is pleasant or you anticipate could be pleasant? The potential rewards. Or how are you reacting perhaps to what's unpleasant, both actual and anticipated? Maybe making plans or enlisting allies or tightening, stiffening your body. Bracing against what's unpleasant, perhaps. Okay, I'll keep moving. It may seem like forever. It's just 7 minutes so far. Now let's move on to perception, all right? So, for example, what are the ways in which, or how are you labeling the situation? Including yourself, the other person, other players, you know, kind of the context, the story around what happened. You know, what are the ways you're labeling it? For example, what meanings are you giving to the situation or interpretations of it in your mind? What intentions are you attributing to others in terms of whatever happened? Intentions, or more broadly, states of mind, motives, inclinations, character defects, what have you, that are being attributed to other people. As you reflect on this third aggregate of perception, it's really okay to have a little bit of a hovering background awareness that is registering some perceptions that really have the ring of truth to them, okay? And other perceptions that maybe seem more questionable, you know, that you want to flag for perhaps later investigation. Maybe they have a quality of topspin, or exaggeration, these other perceptions, or selective focus, or, you know, catastrophizing, or a tendency to see others in a certain way that you know you tend to be biased toward. You know, it's okay to flag those. But, okay. So also in perception, how significant in your mind is the situation? What significance or import are you giving it? In other words, on the 0 to 10, you know, bad behavior scale, is it a 0 or a 10 or something in between? And there, too, you can ask yourself with this kind of hovering metacognitive awareness, is it really that bad? Maybe it is, or maybe it's even worse, actually, when you really think about it. But it's good to ask this little question. Is the significance that I'm, you know, putting on this thing actually true? Another perception is a sense of the implications for the future when we examine a situation. And what do we think it means for from now on? And there, too, you can ask yourself after you clarify that, is that actually true? Going further with the perception aggregate, how is memory involved? For example, how do earlier similar experiences to this one, or earlier similar situations, interactions, or relationships, shade your reactions here? And it's worth asking, of course, has memory for me, including what's called implicit memory, not so much memory for events, but rather underlying attitudes or expectations or emotional residues of past experiences. How is my memory, in effect, like a preamp that the event landed on, like a signal, and then got amplified or turbocharged or distorted by the preamp, if you will, of my memory? that got activated here with regard to this situation or whatever has happened. And then, moving on to the fourth aggregate, finally, volitional formations. What are other associated emotions or desires, plans, takeaways, reflections, what have you, that kind of swirl around together in your mind with this particular situation or relationship? Consider some of the stories you tell yourself about this relationship or situation. Also, a very important thread here, the notion of volition. In other words, be aware of, as you can, the aspects of prioritizing in your mind, or choosing, selecting your reactions to the situation, constructing them in a fundamental sense. What's it like to get a sense of the ways that you are an active agent of your own reactions? You're an active architect of them, or constructor of them, volitionally. And then last, the fifth aggregate, briefly, reflect on the kind of quality of awareness that arises with your reaction stream, the cascade of your reactions to the situation. In what ways is your awareness sort of collapsed into and identified with reactions of various kinds, or beliefs or views of various kinds, so that in a sense consciousness is kind of glued to that part of the reaction? Or to what extent is consciousness more like a big space, a field like the sky of awareness, in which an aspect, an aggregate of your reaction appears like a passing flock of birds? Okay. It's okay to exhale. So let's talk about that. Just a practice, you know. No praise, no blame of attempting to unpack, you know, a major reaction to a major situation or relationship. What did you experience and what did you see or learn when you did that? Interesting. Okay, great. Others? What did you notice? Yeah, yeah. Preamp, right? Like in a stereo. Yeah, turbocharger, I think of it. Yeah. Yeah. Great, thank you. What about other people? Yeah, right there. It was 20 minutes total. That's what we did. It was closer to 18 minutes, but about,
okay.
Yeah.
But just to notice my mind wanting to check out and observing why I was checking out and not wanting to be present, I really appreciated when you asked the question, what is your spiritual analysis of this thing in the relationship? Like, what are you doing with your perception?
Well, thank you. Thank you for sharing that, and I'm glad for you. Yeah, that's great. That's great. It's startling to realize how volitional we are, you know,
yeah,
in a sense.
It
happens to us, but. Thank you. Yeah.
One thing that I noticed when you said to look at the confidentiality of the situation.
What happened?
What really happened. And I found myself thinking, well, it was that bad. And then I realized I was saying, you know, we don't know. So much of, I think, what happened with me is I just immediately jumped to unreal situation. But if I sit and really analyze it and say, you know, I really don't know this thing. I don't know this, the outcome is going to be. I don't know this. Then it gives me a real different perspective on how to take responsibility and I can then go on and become more aware of, you know, my, how I react to the real situation.
Great. Thank you. Yeah, quick, if I could say something quickly about that. For me, it's been striking to realize the ways in which so much of what in any, you know, let's say, is bothering me, is actually not here. It's gone. And it's weird to appreciate what's under our nose every day, every moment, actually, which is that anything in the past is radically non-existent. It's radically gone. You know, it's radically gone. Its residues may persist. You know, the tsunami in Japan is radically gone. Its residues live on and so forth. Things that, you know, I'm just thinking right now, this irritating thing my wife said while I was talking to our son, the three of us together, several days ago. I had forgotten about it. Now I'm thinking about it. Right now, the only place that lives whatsoever is in my mind. Right? She'd be hard-pressed to remember it. Trust me, she's not thinking about it. My son's not thinking about it. The only person who's thinking about it and therefore suffering it is me. It's not here. And isn't that remarkable, isn't it? Much of what we are bothered by is radically not present. It's only when we regenerate it that it has any presence inside our own mind. Yeah?
And there's also the future of, you know, making up the story about, well, this old guy happened to fall.
Yeah.
And I know this for a reason.
Yeah. To build on that as well, if I could, I was, as I did this exercise, I was struck anew by the degree of, you know, if you've ever seen the Rocky Horror Picture Show, anticipation, right? You know, in other words, that we anticipate. The brain has this fantastic simulator, neural networks mainly in the middle, endlessly simulating and, you know, either reviewing the past or especially anticipating a pleasant or unpleasant future. And so much of that anticipation, it's anticipatory pleasant. It's the anticipatory vagueness. Vagueness is the word for the feeling tone. You know, and yet so much of what we anticipate is not true. It's just not true. But we get caught up in reactions to the anticipated. It's not just the feeling tone of what's here and now, but the feeling tone we anticipate, pleasant or unpleasant. Okay, maybe a couple more, and then we'll move to a wrap tonight. Yeah.
I was struck by what an astonishing role memory plays. And it kind of reminded me of the story you told about being out in the canoe.
You're right.
But it kind of feels like if you've been out in the canoe, you've been tipped over repeatedly by the teenagers, and then a log tips you over, but you're going to go immediately.
Yeah.
And I got wondering if from the volitional formation, the belief about the self, like what did you believe about yourself, would that be?
It's a little fuzzy. You could say the memory, if you will, including implicit memory in the turbocharger, that you see yourself a certain way. That, of course, will shade our how we interpret a situation, the meaning we put on it, how we appraise it. These terms are a little technical, appraisal and attribution, but they're actually really useful. How do we appraise a situation, you know? How do we see it? And then what kind of intentions or other mental factors or character factors, including defects, do we attribute to other people? You know, so those two are key. And so in that sense, but a lot of where the, but then it kind of moves out of almost like memory. Perception is seen in feeling tone, or form, feeling, and perception in the Buddhist psychology model are seen as primarily automatic, you know, and in neurology language, they're probably mainly driven by lower regions in the brain, as well as more primitive in evolution developments. And it's more in the volitional formations that the kind of more modern brain, if you will, and more modern mind goes to work. So you can't, in the moment, the feeling tone and the perception and form are kind of given to you. You know, they're, over time you can condition the mind and therefore the brain so that you're less, for example, activated around unpleasantness, or you're less inclined to perceive things a certain way. You know, like for example, a breakthrough for me when I learned about the therapists and others probably know about a personality system called the Enneagram in my 20s. I learned that there were a subtype, a perfectly normal group of people, the expanded anger type, the warrior type. And when I got that, the kind of person who gave me the willies growing up in school, the sort of alpha character, usually male, not always, tends to, toward aggressiveness and fierceness and all the and athleticism and all the things that when I was going through school, like, for me, the nerdy, shy kid, were like, oh, my God, you know, don't go in that bathroom. They might do terrible things to you. in high school, whatever, when I realized, oh, it's just that kind of a person. At that point, boom, it went away. I felt comfortable. I felt relaxed. The label changed, you know. And that then, so in effect, I've conditioned my reaction, my perception, my label, my categorization, and that sort of person from, you know, danger to ally. Okay. But generally, our reactions are kind of given to us. It's a lot, it's in the formations that we're working in situations. Okay.
And I had found myself questioning the word volitional. I wasn't trying to take it apart, but I was just wondering how volitional was it if it bubbles up from the more primitive part of the brain and hits you before you do that.
That's right. Well said, I think. That's why, in part, the feeling tone and perception are not seen as so volitional. You know, because in a way they're more automatic. You drop a brick on your foot, it's not volitional. You know, it gets more volitional how we interpret that event, you know, how we form a plan about what we're going to do about the person who inadvertently dropped it on our foot, you know, especially if it was the third time they dropped it on our foot inadvertently, you know, whatever, you know. That's more in the volitional formations. Yeah. But the larger point is, as I think someone said, it's quite startling to realize how much we construct our own reactions. Okay, last one, more general, all right? What's it like in general to have this sense of, wow, in this reaction that may have had this kind of congealed brick-like quality to it, you know, as a given, right? To realize, whoa, it has all these kind of parts to it. It's much more like this sort of swirly collection, right, of twigs and leaves swirling through consciousness than this, like, congealed, you know, sludgy torpedo with a mind of its own. Anyway, did you have any of you have any sense of that? What happens when you kind of take the time to air it out, you know, to give it the two great tools of medicine, right? Light and air, you know? So anybody want to comment on that part, that more general or generic aspect? Please. Yeah.
I could start another evolution.
Sure.
Like that one. And you said, absolutely gone.
Yeah.
Absolutely extinct. And the repercussions were the fear and failure. Yeah. And then the repercussions of that was, oh, I'm getting more free.
Yeah, no, thank you. You're using abstract language, but obviously you're very in this experience. Of a spiritual teacher I had for a while used the phrase non-binding. It's our experiences move through us, and a way to relate to them is that we're not bound by them. They're aired out. They're unpacked. They're more gossamer-like. They're like foam. They're foamy. We start relating to our experiences as foamy. And we get less bound by them, which means, and also less implicated by them. You know, they're arising due to very large-scale impersonal forces. They swirl through us, you know, apprehended and represented by this particular body-mind, and then they're gone, right? And in that sense of not being bound or implicated, there's a growing freedom. we're liberated. We're kind of liberated here now. We're having reactions. Things move through us. But in a sense, we're liberated from them as they move through. By appreciating their truly foamy, you know, gossamer-like quality. Let's kind of sit with that for a minute and wrap it up. Okay? And as experience is seen in an increasingly non-binding, non-implicating, foamy kind of way, as you can, softening to and opening to what's there as a result, including more presence with others, more kindness, more capacity to move into the world with love, rather than being afflicted by weighty, dense, congealed reactions that we are identified with. Opening to the growing positive that's present as the negative of these emotional reactions opens out and empties out in this foamy way. Thank you for your practice.